Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren. Now, co-host is, he's back after a couple of weeks off, actually all of us. We're back kind of after a little bit of a vacation, and we've got Mr. Dave Martino. He's one of the Backstreet Boys.
New Kids.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I'm more old school, right?
New Kids on the Block. Doesn't that make you feel old?
Yes.
I mean, I'm just, you know, not in a bad way. It's just funny that you were...
I went with my wife to see them. Good job.
Wow. I'm surprised that they're still going, but I guess
their
fans aren't too old that they're retired. So,
Not yet.
Not yet, but you're getting there.
We're getting there, right? Yeah, they're a little younger than I am. Just a little bit, you know?
Now, that's really bad when you go see a band and they're younger than you.
Yeah. Well, the band itself is around my age. Yeah, I'm 51, so they're right around there.
Wow.
But the fans are just a little bit younger.
Oh, they weren't all 12 years old.
No. No, that was back in 88.
That was last century.
I know, right?
They don't count.
Crazy.
Like
20th century.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting old, I'm saying, you know.
That is true, man.
Well, yeah. So I made the cover of Books and Buzz magazine.
Yes.
So what do you think?
It was awesome. No, it was. It was cool.
I couldn't believe it. I went in for all the photos, and I come back out, and then they send me them all. And I thought, when I first looked, I thought, how did you get so old? When did this happen? This isn't me. You're sending me the wrong pictures. Who's this fat old guy? Oh, my God. That's terrible.
No, no.
Well, and the article looks good. So it's good. It's a good thing. Jeez. I'm popular, just in time for retirement.
That's right. Right.
Okay. Well, now, speaking of, I don't know what we're speaking of. We're speaking of books. So now today we've got a really interesting story, and it's a number one bestseller. And we've got the writer here, and the book is called The Colony, Faith and Blood in a Promised Land. And that's Sally Denton. Thank you for being here, Sally.
Thank you.
Well, Sally, first of all, what would get you into writing this kind of a book? Because this is, just so people know, this is kind of about a Mormon settlement, or outpost, I guess, is kind of the setting of this place that the story is. But what made you go there?
Yeah, well, it's about the massacre. It starts with the murder of three young mothers and nine of their children and the wounding of several others in a remote part of northern Mexico. It's actually a fundamentalist Mormon offshoot community, not a an official colony from the mainstream Mormon Church or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But the story is about the murder, and that's where I began. I was really moved emotionally by the tragedy, and just was. I mean, for me to look into something like that is not really unique in my own career. This is my ninth book, and all of my books have been about organized crime and drug. I've been writing about drug trafficking, and this is in an area of drug cartels of northern Mexico. So this was right up my alley as far as the genre that I've been working in for the last 35 years. I've written about two different books about the elements of the Mormon Church, and I've also written about a drug conspiracy in Kentucky and organized crime in Las Vegas, Nevada. And so this is not outside the realm of what I've been doing for 35 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now you say it's the fundamentalist, but and not the mainstream. But isn't sort of the mainstream really the offshoot, because they wanted statehood, and in order to get that, they had to stop polygamy. But a lot of the people that wanted to hold on to the original religion stayed into polygamy, into this lifestyle, saying they weren't going to change. But a lot of Mormons changed. And that's kind of the change is the one we know as the mainstream. But isn't this really more of the true faith?
Well, I think that certainly they would say they would think so, that this is the group. And we're talking back in the 1890s.
Right.
The polygamy was part of the Mormon Church until the 1890s, when in exchange for statehood, they had to abandon the practice. So it became with the what's known as the Woodruff Manifesto. It became illegal for men to cohabit with more than one wife, and so many of those who would see themselves as the true believers then went to different outposts in the United States and northern Mexico. So they could conceivably, I mean, it's now more than 100 years later, and the official mainstream church has millions and millions of members throughout the world, and this fundamentalist offshoot in Colonia LeBaron, which I write about, has 5,000. So it really is not in the mainstream at all.
No, it's not the mainstream. It's kind of closer to how the religion started, I think, is what I'm sort of
They see themselves as the purest of that.
Right, because there's some of them in the States, too.
Absolutely.
Some groups, quite a few. And so, yeah, it's just interesting. So now, is it any different down in Colony in Mexico as compared to the Mormons or the polygamists up here? Do they live a different sort of style, even more so than what they would in America?
Yeah, I haven't written a lot about the Colorado City or the Jeffs family. My sense was, from the reporting that's been done and the things that I have read about it, they seem to be more kind of 19th century pioneer lifestyle. The colony in Colonia LeBaron in Chihuahua that I write about is much more modernized, and the women are, they don't dress in the pioneer fashion. They're more like any other young women in the United States, and they, they don't forswear alcohol like the other Mormon mainstream and fundamentalists. And they just are a kind of a different sect unto themselves.
Wow. So that's interesting. So they wouldn't really stick out as a group. Like if you saw a couple of the ladies that were part of this church.
No, not at all.
You would just think they're just normal citizens. Like you're not going to go, wow, look at them. So now this is an interesting story because back in in early November 2019, you're saying how a caravan and woman and children from the group got basically attacked on the road. Maybe explain the basic story of that, and then we can build from there.
Okay, well, the basic story is that these, as I said, these three young mothers and nine of their children there were 17 in total that set out from a village in Sonora, a state on the other, just south of Arizona. They left there to drive to in a caravan of three SUVs and their children, and they left there to drive to Colonia LeBaron in the adjacent state of Chihuahua over the Sierra Madre Range, and they did it frequently. The two groups are intermarried, even though Colonia LeBaron dates back originally to the 1890s and then into the 1940s after the Mexican Revolution. The community in Lamora is relatively new and begun in the 1950s after the raids on the polygamists in the colonies that you're talking about, or the settlements in Colorado City and what was called Short Creek. But so they're very different, but they're interrelated familially, dating back generations. And so they were accustomed to driving this road, but it happened. One of the women was going north to Phoenix to meet her husband, and the other two were going to veer off and go over the mountains over to Colonia LeBaron in Chihuahua. And just a few miles outside of Lamora, the caravan came under attack, and it was very violent and grisly. And basically these three women and their children were shot. And in the case of one of the cars, the first car carrying a woman named Ronita Miller LeBaron, she and her four children were shot shot, and then their car was burned, and the Mexican officials determined that they had been burned alive. And so it was what I decided, you know, what I looked at were the events and the characters involved. It was a matter of overkill as far as the heinousness and violence of the crime itself. But I became intrigued and sought to dig deeper into the murders themselves, and also the relationship the behind the scenes impulses and characters involved in it. And ultimately, you know, my pursuit was, why were these unarmed women and innocent children on this dangerous road in the first place? Where were the men? Where were the husbands? They had been warned. This is, as I said, one of the most violent and dangerous roads in the entire world, and at the time, and these close-knit families were accustomed to traveling with guards and had been for several years. So I just, you know, was really curious about what led to these women and children being alone and unarmed traversing this dangerous road at a time where what was clear was this was not a case of mistaken identity. That was clear from the beginning, from all of the Mexican military, Mexican police, and the families themselves. There was no case of mistaken identity. They were obviously targeted, and it wasn't the wrong place at the wrong time. They weren't caught in the crossfire between warring cartels. They were targeted, and so I devote my entire book to trying to determine why they were targeted and why they were out there by themselves, kind of sacrificial, the women and children.
Do you think they were trying to leave the compound, or, you know, to get away?
You know, I did not come up with any evidence to support that. That certainly came up at the right after the massacre. It was so brutal, and obviously gained the attention of media and the press from all over the world. There were many rumors and theories that were floated at the time, and that was one of them. But that is one that I gave less credence to than to a lot of the other theories.
Well, do you think, was there any reason the cartel would target them? Did they have a grudge against the Mormon sect?
No, there's absolutely, well, there could be reasons that the cartels targeted them, but I don't think it has anything to do with religion. They've been living there, you know, the Mormon colony and Colonia Liberian predates the cartels. So does Lamora and Sonora. They predate the cartels. They've been living next to major drug growers and traffickers for, you know, the last 50 years. So this was a long-standing relationship, and they didn't, you know, the cartels didn't just wake up one day and say, you know, we don't want any Mormon polygamists in our midst. They've been living side by side, as I said, for decades. So that I don't think that any kind of prejudice or anti-Mormon persecution plays any role in this.
Mm. The whole thing is kind of weird, but because did you get to the bottom of why they were traveling alone, like why they didn't have any of the men with them?
Well, I don't. I didn't get to the bottom of that, except that, you know, the men went on to be very vocal, their husbands, and it seemed to me obvious, not just to me personally, but from the evidence that I gathered and the numerous people that I interviewed, including law enforcement and drug enforcement agents on both sides of the border and on both sides of the law, that this was a message that was sent to the men in their lives. This was not, they, you know, there were between, there are credible reports of sicarios with armed, you know, automatic weapons, armed to the teeth, as many as 50, and some say as many as 100 hitmen that went out to kill these women and children. And so that to me is a very strong message.
What would their message be? Like, what would a bunch of Mormons be to a gang of drug dealers? Like, you know, were they in their way? Were they causing trouble? What was it that bothered them about?
Well, as I said, they've been living next to each other for generations. And there's the Mormon colony, Colonia Liberian. It's a very wealthy group of pecan farmers and nut farmers and agricultural developers and real estate developers. And so there's a lot of conflicts between them and their neighbors that have nothing to do with their religion, but have a lot to do with money and resources and water. One of the most credible theories posited from the beginning was that they were there were great tensions between the Liberian family and their neighbors over the dwindling resources, getting more and more dwindling in this arid land during climate change, when everyone is struggling for access to the same water. And we're talking about whole communities that are surrounding them, that the water table has been lowered because of the use by the Liberian properties for these massive nut farms that take an extraordinary amount of water. And at the same time, the other influences are competing for these same resources, be they the drug cartels, the drug growers, the transporters, the fentanyl, the methamphetamine producers, the tequila, the agave plant producers, the avocado producers. There's a lot of people with multi-millions of dollars, billions of dollars at stake competing for the same natural resources. And the LeBaron, the Colonia LeBaron and the leaders of that family are smack dab in the middle of this environment that is a hotbed.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, so when they do that, what changes were they expecting the men to do after killing a lot of their family members, do you think?
I'm not sure that it is over water, but it seems to me that they're sending a message either that they hadn't done what they said they were going to do, or they were threatening with the hopes that they would change the course in some direction, be that water or agriculture.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Culture or it all coincides, which I deal with at great length in my book. It coincides with the incarceration of Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, who is finally caught and jailed in the United States in the Supermax prison in Colorado. That's in the summer of 2019. And up until then, everybody got along pretty well as long as El Chapo's Sinaloa cartel was running things. And once, on all of the colonies and the colonies on both sides, both states, they had friendly relations with the checkpoints of the Sicario checkpoints, and it was, as they described it, was a live and let live arrangement. Once the drug wars came to the region and things were destabilized, I think there was a lot more at stake, and there's a lot of conflicts between the encroachment from the La Línea, the Juarez cartel, and coming up from the Jalisco New Generation, a lot of which is still going on now, but a lot of battles between rival cartels and the dominant Sinaloa cartel that's been dominant in the region for 30 years. And there was these people were in the way for some reason. And I think that's still, we talk about a house of mystery. That's it. I mean, I didn't expect to solve the case when you've got, the Mexican government and drug enforcement on both sides of the border and Mexican military. They still haven't solved it. It's an open case. They've arrested more than 50 people, but nobody's been tried or nobody's actually been charged unless it's happened in the last, couple of months. Nobody's been charged with the murder itself. Everybody who's been charged has been charged with being affiliated with organized crime and different factions. And I don't have the subpoena power that the Mexican government has. But so I never really set out to solve the murders. No, I mean, I never fully expected to solve the murders completely. But I knew that I was going to be able to show that they were targeted, that it was not mistaken identity, and that somebody was sending a message of strength to the powerful forces in those communities. And those powerful forces were not women and children, babies on the road.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, then, you're saying that no one's actually been tried or charged with the murders, but do they know who held the guns and who actually did the killing or shooting?
They haven't charged anybody with that. They've charged people with, there was somebody who had a cell phone video of the killings. And I think that the Salt Lake Tribune, I think Nate Carlisle at the Salt Lake Tribune might've been the first reporter to get a copy of that. And the reporters, the firsthand reporting on the ground, the frontline reporting was really exceptional. But nobody followed through to, including the Mexican government, which also was not encouraging for the U.S. government to come in. I don't know if you remember, but at the time when this happened, former President Trump immediately tried to use it as a pretext to invade Mexico, and was lobbied by the LeBaron family to designate the cartels as terrorists, which would give the United States the freedom to invade Mexico, which was an enormously unpopular move.
Well, it's ridiculous, because if countries invaded the U.S. every time someone, 9 people got shot, the U.S. would be invaded constantly, right?
I mean, that's the truth.
You know, it's ridiculous. It's you can't go into another country or something, and it's pretty small. I mean, it's a terrible thing, but it's not like we're talking thousands and cities were being held hostage or something. We're just talking about a daily shooting.
It's not an everyday thing in Mexico as well.
No. But it's just like, it's like a daily thing in the States. So, that's just macho talk. That's all that was. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. But at the end of the day, so no one's got charged. Do you think that the government just doesn't care, or the government of Mexico doesn't want to charge these cartel people?
You know, one of my deep inside sources was Michael Espejil, who's one of the highest level drug enforcement retired drug enforcement agent who was undercover in Mexico for 30 years, and he said under the new president López Obrador, he's a very risk averse and non conflict oriented president. His motto has been hugs, not bullets, and is not confronted. He's been very reluctant to confront the cartels. And as a matter of policy, so I think that contributes to it. But certainly, You know, Mexico is a land of conspiracy if you spend any time down there, and more journalists are being killed down there right now than any other place in the world. It's not unusual. It's rare. I guess back to Mike Vigil. Vigil said it's very rare to find, you know, to actually see anybody go to trial and go to jail and spend a life in jail at a high level. I'm talking not, you know, street punks. But it's very rare for anyone in a case of this magnitude to actually be held accountable.
Wow. So what do you know about the group themselves? Like, how would you describe their lifestyle before the shooting?
Well, I mean, I really went into that because I'm descended from a long line of Mormon polygamists, and so that was one of the things that attracted my attention to the story from the beginning. And I looked a lot. I mean, the colony gives a comprehensive portrait of the family itself, and you know, it's a uniquely American religion based on male supremacy and female servitude. And I was fortunate enough to get very deep inside the colony with sources among the women to talk about the lifestyle. But basically, the polygamous men have, I would say, an average of about four wives, some more, some less. And only, like in the United States, in Mexico, only the first wife is considered a legal spouse. So everybody else and the children, the subsequent wives and the children are considered property that belong to the patriarch of the family. And so, you know, they don't have social security cards, and the men are mostly dual citizens, and many of the first wives are, and some of the children are dual American Mexican citizens. But most of the women and children don't have much free agency. Their lives are dictated to them by their husbands and fathers. And many of the women are, you know, it's a lot of the men, the women are holding down the fort in the colonies, while many of the men are working in the United States in construction and the oil fields. And so the women are overseeing the Mexican laborers, while the men are in the United States.
Wow, it's crazy that things like this can still go on today.
Very sad,
you know. Now, Mitt Romney, isn't he from a Mormon Mexican family? Is he from this area as well, or?
He's from the original colonies that were sent down by Brigham Young, president of the church in the 1880s, settled up northern Chihuahua, north of where Colonial LeBaron is, but settled up north on closer to the Texas border, and to practice polygamy in the 1800s. But after the Mexican Revolution, most of them left and went back to the United States. Joined the mainstream church and stayed in the United States. Many of them, including the Romney family, returned to northern Chihuahua after the Mexican Revolution and went back onto their farms and into their homes that they had built. But at that point, they were no longer practicing polygamy. So then when the LeBaron family came back to the Mormon colonies up in where the Romney family was, they were ostracized for practicing polygamy because all of the old polygamists from the Romney compounds had joined the mainstream church. And in fact, there's a temple in that part of Mexico. So the LeBaron family was ostracized from the previous polygamist who had joined the church.
Wow, quite a story. What is it that you hope people get out of the book when they read it?
You know, I mean, that's, I don't, in addition to the humanity that was in play, it's a cautionary tale of the level of violence taking place that most, you know, just across our southern border that I think most Americans don't think about. And America plays a large role in this, not just in, well, in flooding Mexico with guns and America's insatiable appetite for drugs. So, you know, there's this appetite for recreational drugs in the U.S. and an insatiable appetite for guns in Mexico, for violent traffickers in Mexico. And there's an endless supply of high caliber weapons ready to go down there and, enabling the cartels to terrorize entire regions of the country. And it's very close to our back door.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know about the story, or the story came out, kind of came and went like everything else. Why do you think that is? Why isn't this sort of something that is still talked about?
I don't know. It kind of surprised me. I got on the story that, you know, the day it happened, and I just felt that it was so horrendous. As you said, there's, you know, lots and lots of bloodshed and mass murders and on both sides of the border. But this one with, you know, these young, beautiful young mothers and these innocent children just in the middle of nowhere. And for no apparent reason, just really struck a chord with me. And like I said, the frontline reporters did a fantastic job on the scene. But I was surprised at how little follow-up there was later, because there were Reuters and BBC and, you know, people came from all over the world to cover the story. And then the Mexican government put up a monument to the victims in, I think, 2020. And then they, you know, arrest somebody from time to time. But that was the end of it. So that's why I decided to write the book about it, I guess.
Did you find out anything about the lives of the victims? The actual people who died?
Yeah, I have pretty extensive portraits of the women. They were all born and raised in polygamous families. One of them was in a political marriage. The other two seems like they were not, or they were in their first marriage at least. But, you know, they were young women. Ronita was 30 years old and already, you know, they were all young women who had already had multiple children. And so the lives of the women is who I really focused on. The lives of the men are kind of, they're obvious. They're out there, as you said. They're the macho guys that are busy with, in their enterprises. And, there's not much of a secret to them as far as their, you know, they're kind of prosaic macho men. And patriarchs, but the women, and you know, they were kind of predictable as well. Most of them, you know, they're demure, and they, as true believers, believe that their only avenue to the promised land or avenue to heaven is by being pulled, you know, through the veil, they call it, by their husband. So, that was one of the things I guess I was looking at more than anything is, you know, why do these women submit and why do they continue to stay? Especially in this conflict at a time when their husbands and brothers and uncles are going to the United States to make money and they're exposed to a different lifestyle, different women, and come home to, you know, it's more of an old, you know, a, well, first of all, this group had their own church, the Church of the Firstborn. So, but they were, you know, it's very much an Old Testament version of men and women. And it's got a lot in the book is full of different stories about the lifestyle down there and dating back to the 70s.
Was there anything surprising that you found out that you didn't expect to hear about?
Well, I think the biggest surprise is in the middle of it. You know, this is a three-year nearly 3-year research and writing project. And I think the biggest surprise to me was coming across the longstanding relationship between Colonia LeBaron and Nexium, the sex cult from upstate New York. And it was, you know, it had been very, this hadn't been widely reported and only mentioned on one obscure kind of Nexium blog. And then once by the Albany newspaper during the criminal trial of Keith Raniere, the leader of Nexium, and the relationship between Nexium and Mexico, and the relationship between the LeBarons, the LeBaron men, and a large peace movement in Mexico, but a peace movement that is founded on fully arming its citizens. So, I mean, there were a lot of surprises, but that was probably, you know, the one that came up in the middle of everything. And I thought, wow, and now I have to turn my attention to a sex cult in America.
Not one thing is another. Boy, yeah, very interesting story. Did you get any pushback doing a story like this, or any sort of people that didn't really want this coming out?
No, not so far. I mean, there were a lot of people that were afraid for their lives in talking to me. And, I was really fortunate to get a lot of inside information. And, there were a lot of people that wanted this story told. I would say there were a lot more of those than those who didn't, or that I've heard from so far.
Yeah. Well, so how do people find you? Like, what the book is out everywhere, but do you have a website?
I do. It's sallydenton.com, www.sallydenton.com, and my books are sold there. They're obviously everywhere, Barnes & Noble and independent bookstores and Amazon and, you know, wherever books are.
Well, great.
Now, the Mexican edition coming out this week, I believe. And there's a lot of interest in it in Mexico, possibly more in Mexico than the United States, but it's really, it's a very much a Mexican story, and Mexican nationals are very interested in this ultra wealthy, sovereign Mormon colony. And so it's getting a lot of attention down there.
Yeah, I guess it would. Well, now we'll have everything up on our website, and so people can find it with one click. And we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And now the book we're talking about is called The Colony, Faith and Blood in a Promised Land. Of course, our guest is the author of that book, Sally Denton. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sally.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.